Live from the Civic Media World Headquarters in Madison, Wisconsin, it's the Todd Albaugh Show. And now, pursuing truth wherever it may lead, here's your host, Todd Albaugh.
Across Wisconsin on the Civic Media Radio Network and streaming worldwide on the Civic Media app. Good afternoon, everybody. I'm Todd Albaugh, along with the outstanding Mr. Dahmers on the board. Welcome back to hour number two of the show here on a Friday the 13th, 2023, six past the hour of 2 o'clock. A little tongue-tied there. I told you, Mr. Dahmers, at the top of the show, it's a good thing the weekend is here. Because
it's a good thing the window is here as well, because it's raining outside.
It's a good thing the window doesn't open or I might just jump out.
Maybe we both need some caffeine.
I think I need some caffeine. I just need to chill. It's just been one of those weeks, I think. I think all of us go through that from time to time.
Oh, yeah. Some more often than others.
Yeah.
I'm just saying some.
By the way, I love your shirt. Tell people on the Zoom or the Twitter or the Facebook what you're wearing.
Well, I am wearing a WIRI t-shirt, Wiscountry Radio, On the back is our chicken, who I believe the name that chicken contest is still going on. It's a microphone that's also a chicken.
Yes.
And it is glorious.
It is glorious. Yeah, it's great to have the chicken there. I'm trying to behave myself, you understand? Here's the one I want to talk about for a second. We had our wonderful guest, Tim Greison, on yesterday, the film critic from Los Angeles, and talking about the new Taylor Swift movie. And again, maybe I'm mischaracterizing it. It is a concert?
It's not a concert film.
Yeah. All right, a concert film. Taylor Swift's concert film of her big tour from the summer. And if you can't go to the tour, then you can go to the movie and experience the tour.
A movie ticket is a lot cheaper than a Taylor Swift concert ticket. Yes. That is for sure.
Not all of us can be Travis Kelce, but yes, absolutely. And so, but here's the thing, a story in the Washington Post today, Taylor Swift is adding billions to the U.S. economy, billions. Her record shattering Eras tour is set to be the most lucrative concert run in American history, also infusing the American economy with a trickle-down flow of cash.
She is the Beatles of today.
That's a good way to put it. I don't think that's overstating it. When you look at the crowds that she gets, and as Tim pointed out yesterday, and from others that I know have gone, it's like a three-hour, 20-minute show. She doesn't take a break. I guess the sets are just elaborate, and she has several costume changes. I think you get your money's worth, even though you have to pay an arm and a leg to get there in many cases, but you get your money's worth. And the thing is that she is going directly to these movie theaters instead of having a middle person distributor working directly with AMC theaters. And she is giving a portion of that to the theaters that show the movies. So it's helping the local cinemas. And then she's also, I guess, going to use some of that money for humanitarian or other things as well.
I think you have to. If you get that much money, what else are you going to do with it?
I mean, she, and God love her. Look, I think this is a great, as I said yesterday, a great example to particularly young women to say that, you know what, you can be a woman and you can do it. You know, I mean, that's one of the things I so admire about Oprah Winfrey is she came from virtually nothing. And many people said, not just because she was a woman, but also because she was a black person, you know, had a lot to come through and get over and get through the bigotry and the sexism. And she made it big time. And Taylor Swift, maybe not quite as many obstacles, but certainly, you know, she was a young woman. A lot of males tried to take advantage of that, not necessarily sexually or physically, but just emotionally and business-wise. I mean, she had recut how many of her songs and albums just to get, you know, control back over them.
Yep. Yeah, that's why you got Taylor's version on everything now.
Right. So I mean, I think it's fantastic that she's doing this. So anyway, Taylor Swift injecting millions of dollars back into the economy. Coming up at the bottom of the hour, we're going to have Jason Klom, who has been with us before. He is an author of the new book that is out now called We're Not Worthy. It's a history of the 90s TV sketch comedy. So looking forward to that interview at the bottom of the hour. Jason Klum joining us live, author of We Are Not Worthy, a history of the 90s TV sketch comedy. So that will be great to talk to him via the beautiful StreamYard version here at Civic Media. Looking at the text line here, getting a lot of text over the last few minutes from both Steve and Milwaukee. Let's see, who's Austin Scott? Is he a moderate or another Freedom Caucus guy? I like that Jeffrey's idea, five Republicans, is easier than what they're going for now. All right, off the text, you can text us as well via the Civic Media app. I will be honest, I never heard of Austin Scott until about 10 minutes ago when this started to go over my phone. Here, I'm just going to read this live for you. We'll learn together. Apparently, Austin Scott, a Republican from Georgia, has now joined the race for the House Speaker leadership in opposition to Jim Jordan. Republican this is off of CNN. Austin Scott of Georgia is seeking the House speakership. Scott announced his intentions for the speakership moments ago with a post on X, formerly known as Twitter, or as Craig Ferguson calls it, Twix. He says, quote, "I have filed for the speakership of the House. We are in Washington to legislate, and I want to lead the House that functions in the best interest of the American people," unquote. We'll learn a little bit more about Scott Austin. Maybe he's a brother or a distant cousin to Steve Austin.
Well, it's Austin Scott, so.
Oh, well, that's the dyslexia. I like him better, actually, as Austin Scott. I like you better as Jenny Petty. We'll come back after this. Don't go anywhere. This is the Todd Allbowl Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. Welcome back to the Todd Allbowl Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. Although I have no idea what's going on, Mrs. Owens.
This is the WWE theme music for Stone Cold Steve Austin.
Very good. Stone Cold Steve Austin. I've never heard of this guy. Austin Scott. I mean, I'm no reason to fake it, right? I might as well just be honest.
I haven't either.
Austin Scott. He looks a little bit like a heavier set or a heavier Ken doll. He has that kind of very thick, dark Republican hair. He's my age, 53. Looks better than
dark
me.
Dark Republican hair? Dark Republican. What does that mean?
Well, it's kind of that, you know, it's not quite like TV news anchor hair, which is a little bit more fluffy. This is more of your dark. You see this all the time. Believe me, as someone who went to a lot of Republican conventions over the years, these guys, what they do, they kind of looks like 1950s hair for a guy. It's parted on one side. It's kind of, you know, a little bit of gel in it. And sometimes they'll dye it darker because they don't want the gray to show. And gotcha. So it looks a little bit like a helmet, like a Ken doll, like that the hair that sits. Of course, Ken's hair is blonde, I guess, but more of a darker brunette version of a Ken doll. And they're very clean shaven, kind of broad shoulders. They always have this guy does too. And look, I do too. Has a double chin going on. So I mean, here I am judging this guy on his photo. But I'm just telling you, they all have this look. I'm telling you, all these kind of, you know, they go, I don't know. They're just goofy. They're just goofy.
I think that goes to any side of the aisle.
I guess. They always have that certain look. Well, I can tell you this. He must be a Trumper because he was at speaking to a crowd at a rally featuring former President Donald Trump in 2021. So that tells me everything I need to know. Because if you're still for Donald Trump, especially after 2020 and January 6th, that's all you need to know. So my mind has been made up. He's clearly a Trump guy. So that's what we know about him. But we'll see if we can get more information as it becomes available. I want to switch over to a couple of sports things here. Number one, do you get Amazon Prime, Mr. Zomers?
I do have Amazon Prime.
Do you really? Wow, very swanky, Mr. Zomers.
Is that so?
I don't know. I think I'm just in the minority of goofballs that don't have it.
I know when I was in high school, it started becoming a thing that most families get.
Really?
And
well, yeah, I guess.
I got it originally with the student discount when I started college, and then my whole family still uses my Prime account to get like the free fast shipping and stuff.
So if you have Amazon, if you have an Amazon account, you pay for Amazon Prime, does that mean then that you get the TV service as a part of that? Or is that a separate buy?
You get Prime Video,
okay,
which has a lot on it, but really? Not everything. Right. I think some stuff you have to pay for, but I know you do get the football games.
Well, that's interesting. See, I'm just not an Am. I know I'm in the minority. I remember when I had my coffee shop here in Madison in 2015 or 16. 16, I guess. And a couple of my college age baristas, I'd say, well, geez, I gotta get this, but it's gonna take a while. They're like, oh, just use my Prime account, it'll be here tomorrow. I'm like, what?
Yep.
I'm just not used to that. You understand?
I don't like supporting Amazon and Jeff Bezos, but it's so darn convenient.
See, that's it. That's what it gets. Even you younger people, who I love the fact that you're all about the environment, but see, the convenience outweighs the environment.
Well, either way, the shipping is gonna.
Right. Either way. But I
and
just.
You can, at least, if you are somebody who orders a lot of packages, it's absolutely worth it. And you can set up.
I always appreciate a good package, but go ahead. Thank you very much.
And you can set up your Amazon Day or your Prime Day, whatever they call it, where anything you order during that week or 2 weeks or whatever is delivered on the same day to make it less bad for the environment.
Well, I do not have Amazon Prime. I subscribe to the Garrison Keillor Ralph's Pretty Good Grocery line, where if you can't find it at Ralph's, you could probably do without it. So I have bought things online occasionally, but I like to shop in person, even like for like a bolt or something. I'll go to my local Ace Hardware.
I'm that kind of a person to shop in person when possible. You know, supporting local businesses is great, but
I think sometimes you gotta shop that way.
Yep. Depends what's available.
There is a point to this, but if you want to join the conversation, clearly a Friday conversation, 844-967-2789, 844-967-2789. Well, the reason I bring this up is I do not have Amazon Prime. I did not watch Travis Kelce and Taylor Swift defeat, along with the Kansas City Chiefs, by the way, defeat Russell Wilson and the Denver Broncos. Russell Wilson is like 1-5 now with the Broncos, and they are up next against the Packers. The Packers go out to Denver to take on the Broncos next. But anyway, there's a story. I follow this site called Awful Announcing, and it's all about broadcasting and announcers. And the headline was Al Michaels, the great broadcaster Al Michaels, who's the play-by-play guy on Amazon. Al Michaels says Prime Video will show Taylor Swift, quote, in moderation. You can't make a sideshow of the show. So even Al Michaels is a little ticked off with how much airtime Taylor Swift is getting. So I was just curious, did they honor that? Did they barely show her, or was it like Taylor Swift every other shot?
I don't know. I didn't watch it.
You didn't watch the game. If anybody did, let me know. 844-967-2789. 844-967-2789. Let's go to Brooklyn, Wisconsin. The great, beautiful little burg of Brooklyn. Very beautiful area of Wisconsin. Peggy from Brooklyn, what say you?
I totally get the Prime Amazon, and I'm 65 years old, and 90% of my friends have Prime.
Really?
For the same reason.
Really?
For the exact same reason. Yes, the exact same. It's easy. I'm not saying it's cheap, but it's easy, and you get it the next day, and we totally hate to support them. But it's just, we do. But it's like, oh my gosh, the convenience. And see, I have horses, so I order a lot of weighty stuff, so I get obviously free shipped. Yeah. I mean, almost half the stuff I order weighs 10 pounds or more.
See, that,
so it's definitely worth it for you. Not doing it would just throwing away money.
I know.
But see, it gets to my point. This is a great call, Peggy, because it gets exactly to my point. The people that have it, but they're upset that they have it.
Yes. And everyone I talk to said, boy, I wish I didn't support them. But it's like, I think it's such a bad habit now that I've done it for like 15 years, I don't know if I could go the other way. I hate to say that.
Once you go Amazon, you can't go back. Is that what you're saying?
I know. Yes, I'm saying that. Okay, have a great day.
Right, thanks, Peggy. Appreciate it. See, that's exactly what we're looking for. 844-967-2789. 844-967-2789. Are you an Amazon Prime member? And if you are, do you resent the fact that you are? Let's go to our ongoing contributor and friend, Jeff Perry. Mr. Perry, what say you?
Did I hear you right? You enjoy a nice package?
That is true. Who doesn't? I mean, who?
I just wanted to make sure.
Yes. I mean, especially around the holidays.
Well, I gotta count myself in that column as well. Todd,
welcome to the club. Go ahead.
even I have Prime, Todd.
And even I have
never
Prime.
Seen any movies. I never see any movies. I haven't seen a movie in the theater since Titanic. And even I have Prime. So,
are you serious or are you just saying that?
that may be a slight exaggeration.
A slight, all right.
But
you should go watch some movies, Jeff.
And there are. So, but yeah, no, and I got to agree with the last caller. You know, it's totally a convenience thing, and I hate myself for it, but I use it all.
Don't
the time.
Hate yourself, but see, I guess people, I don't know what it is, Jeff. It was just like you come from the same place I do, at least I mean geographically, Richland Center, and I'm a hands-on kind of guy. I like to go select my package individually. I like to go into the hardware store. I like to try clothes on. People order footwear, shoes online.
That I would never do.
I would never do that.
See, that was me too before the pandemic. When the pandemic came along, everything changed. And now I just dialed something up on the computer and order it. All the time now, and I don't like myself that I do that. But I do it because it'll just be there in a couple of days, and I don't have to worry about it. I don't have to go out. I don't have to get in the car or anything. It's not something I'm proud of. But it was the pandemic.
I also think that maybe I know myself well enough where I think if I signed up for it, then I think I'm going to have a problem because the fact that I have to go and physically buy things still, or that I make myself do that. I think it limits the amount of things I buy. I think if I got into Amazon, I'm just clicking and punching, I'm going to be eating rice and beans by the end of the pay period.
Yeah, it can be dangerous.
You know? Well, not there's anything wrong with that. What?
I did buy a platinum sink.
A platinum sink? Really? Well,
but
putting money right down the drain.
It does affect that, but no, and you're right. That does happen to me too.
All right,
I blame the pandemic totally.
As long as we got you on the phone, because you're a sports guy too, and I told people we're going to talk about this, and we got on this Amazon kick here. The Badgers play. The Badgers play Iowa tomorrow. Huge game. Iowa comes in 5-1. Wisconsin 4-1. The winner of this game has the inside track to win the Big Ten West for the final time. Because the Big Ten getting rid of divisions next season. Jeff, what's your take on this game?
I think it's good. It's going to be tough, but I'm going to give it to the Badgers. I think they're going to squeak it out. I got to support the home team, but I don't think it's going to be easy.
No, it's always been a tough game. And these two, there was a great story in the State Journal today. These two teams mirror each other. It's kind of those, like that Spider-Man meme or whatever that is, where you got the two Spider-Men. They're very similar. But now we've got Phil Longo and the air raid offense. And, of course, Kurt Farron still has his son, who's this is real. His contract says they have to get a certain percentage of scores over the course of the year, or he's gone. That way, Dad doesn't have to fire him. He's basically fired himself. I'm serious. That's what they did. And he is now below his total, what he needs for the season.
That's how my parents got me out of the house. It was something similar to that.
Oh, really? Yeah. You got yourself out. They didn't kick you out.
But no, I think I'm going to give it to the Badgers, but I think it's going to be a really hard-fought win.
Yeah. No, I do. Whether... I'm not sure if it's going to be a factor or not. They're saying now maybe not quite a downpour that they first expected, but high is only in the low 50s. So it's going to be blustery out there at Camp Randall tomorrow. But a big game for the Big Ten West and the Wisconsin Badgers under Coach Luke Fickell. And also for Kurt Ferentz, I think I read in there he's been with that team for 20-some years now. I didn't realize that.
Wow.
I mean, just been there forever. So you can hear the game, by the way, right here all across the Civic Media Radio Network at our former station. Well, I'm still there, Jeff. Come on over. But WRCE in Richland Center, where Jeff and I started our careers together in radio, he before me. So you can tune into WRCE in Richland Center, also WRJN over in Kenosha Racine, also Wisconsin Rapids, Amory, I believe, as well. You can find it all on the Civic Media app. The Badgers taking on Iowa tomorrow. Make sure you listen to the game right here in Civic Media. Mr. Perry, thank you so very much. I appreciate it. Talk to you soon. Stay tuned. Bye, next. We have Jason Klom, author of We're Not Worthy. Don't go anywhere. This is the Todd Lovell Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. The Todd Lovell Show on the Civic Media Radio Network, pursuing truth wherever it may lead and having fun doing it. We're at the having fun doing it part. It is Friday, October 13th, 33 minutes now past the hour of 2 o'clock across the state of Wisconsin and on the Civic Media app. Thank you, Mr. Zommers, on the board. Little Wayne's World there. Very, very well done. We appreciate that. Our next guest here on the show, and we appreciate him coming back, because, of course, Jason, so very, very few people do. But thank you for coming back, Jason Klom, who is an actor, voice actor, and sketch comedian. And most importantly, at least for today, he's an author of the brand new book called We're Not Worthy, thus the music intro, A History of the 90s and TV Sketch Comedy. And you can find more information at sketchcomedybook.com. That's sketchcomedybook.com. Jason Klom, welcome back to the show.
Thank you so much for having me back. And boy, do I know the feeling of people just not coming back. It's either because, for me, it's because, oh, you have how many listeners to this podcast? It's like, you signed up. You didn't ask.
Right?
You know, so that's usually how it goes for me.
Well, I appreciate that. We were talking before this segment, your last segment, and some great phone calls. The fact that I am one of the few people left on the planet that does not have Amazon Prime. But other people, so do you have Amazon Prime?
I have it because, for the most part, as I did mention, I still mostly don't leave the house, even though I always stay vaxxed and stuff.
Right.
Even though that took forever to happen this year. Yeah. But yeah, I need it. But I also have like a couple other subscription delivery services, and I kind of should just cut one off, except the Walmart one doesn't come with free entertainment. That's how,
right?
They hook you. You
exactly.
Know what I mean? That's the thing. There's some good stuff on Prime.
Well,
not a lot.
Yeah, see, well, of course, the big football game last night we were talking about, only on Amazon Prime. And Al Michaels, there's a story in Awful Announcing we were referring to. Al Michaels, a little saucy at all the attention that Taylor Swift is getting, and he was going to put his foot down last night. And he said, we're not cutting to Taylor Swift. This is about football, you understand? So I was asking people, because I don't have it, so I didn't watch. So I just wondered who won out, Al Michaels or Taylor Swift and Travis Kelce. My guess is Taylor Swift.
I have no idea. Yeah, I am the least sportsy person on the planet, unfortunately.
Well,
so,
I love this storyline of Taylor Swift, yeah, taking over the NFL. I just find it fascinating and entertaining.
I think it's hilarious, and I,
right?
Hope she does.
God bless her.
What, it doesn't make a difference to me.
And maybe this would make a great sketch comedy thing between, I would think, oh, yeah, the SNL is going to go off on
happen.
That, right?
Yeah. Tomorrow night, that's maybe the opener. There's, unless something, well, it's that, or no, it'll be Speaker of the House stuff. And
yeah,
then
probably.
The next thing will probably be Taylor Swift, though. That's going to be, the funniest.
We've had you on the show before and appreciate you coming back in all seriousness. Pardon me. You have a lot of experience as an actor and sketch comedian, voice actor, as we said, and you know this genre so well. And now you've sat down, now you can add author to your list of great accomplishments in this new book called We're Not Worthy, A History of the 90s TV Sketch Comedy. Jason Klom, how did you come to think of writing this, and how did it kind of all come together?
I've been studying comedy since I was tiny, like 8, and like
right,
mostly studying how to write comedy and what's making, why'd my mom laugh at that thing I didn't understand? Because when you're a kid, you always laugh at the stuff your parents laugh at. So I wanted to pick it apart because I wanted to entertain people.
Sure.
And then eventually I got interested in the history of it. way later when I started to do the Comedy on Vinyl podcast. But I've been, you know, always aware of like what happened way too many generations before I was born. Mm-hmm. And I pitched a book about vinyl comedy, about comedy records and the history of those. And then sort of realized, oh, but the ones I love the most are sketch. And then dug back into my memories as to the stuff I loved the most growing up. And it was either Cheech and Chong albums, or it was going to be In Living Color, right. The State, and a few other, and like a couple of years of SNL, that sure. kind of thing.
So you just kind of thought, well, I'm going to write about this and put it all together. Is this something where you sat down and talked to some of those people involved in some of those biggest sketches? Or was it just a lot of time on the internet and libraries or whatever?
There was a bit of there was plenty of internet, mostly like newspapers.com and other like original research, unless I needed a strict timeline that, you know, people know is absolutely a fact. Mm-hmm. But I interviewed 150 people for the book, including like Carol Burnett, Mike Myers, Bob Odenkirk. I'm so spoiled, I can't remember all the names, but 150 people, many of whom were huge stars of their own shows at the time.
That's
so
amazing.
That's where I started. And it's not an oral history, but I do sort of start with those stories and then flesh out the actual history of the shows, as well as the history of like Second City and UCB and things like that.
Did you save, like when you were doing some of these interviews, did you save audio of these interviews?
Oh, yeah. I had to because I needed to transcribe them, which came out to about 2.2 million words transcribed.
Wow.
Yeah, sifting through that was the pain. It was fun, and I mostly for the most part remembered the stuff that was important, because from an interview you tend to pick out the one or two things that matter the most or you think will work. But yeah, there was a lot of that.
I'm a reader. I love the good written word, so I can't wait to get a copy myself and read it. But I would think at some point it would also make just a great, whether it's a video or just audio, for folks to listen to some of these raw interviews at some point as well.
I would love that, but I didn't get anybody's permission. So, and believe me, I thought about it because I've been podcasting for 12 years. And I'm like, maybe I can, and I'm like, you know, right. that's double duty and most people will be turned off by it. So my plan is I'm currently putting together a pitch deck to try and turn it into a TV series, like a mini series.
Wow.
And then we can just redo the interviews and then double down on some of the points that are in the book.
See, right there is a great example of somebody that has experience and knows what the heck's going on versus just a goofball like Todd. Because I think of ideas and then people are like, oh yeah, Todd, there's a legal factor to that. So I never think about like how it gets done. I'm like, oh, wouldn't that be cool? And then people have to say, no, Todd, we can't do that.
From I will say, like, some I'm doing follow-up interviews too for like the second edition of the book, like because I missed some stuff or I wanted to talk about more shows. As I do that, I'm like, do you want to do a podcast or not? Because it's a little easier to ask that than 150 people,
right.
including really big names, you know what I mean? And I don't want Carol Burnett to say no because she doesn't care about podcasts.
We talked about that interview a little bit last time you were here, but for folks that might not have heard it, tell folks what it was like, because she's just an icon. I think over the years, I've probably seen almost every episode of the Carol Burnett Show. What was she like as just someone to interview and to sit and chat with?
I mean, charming is like the first word that pops into your head. Although what's funny is I also interviewed somebody because she had a show in the 90s as well as the 60s.
Yep.
For the book, I interviewed her mostly only for the 60s show because there's one chapter of preamble that's all about everything that came before the 90s. But I interviewed somebody who was on her 90s show. And she said, yeah, but the one thing you didn't get from that call is how good Carol smells all the time. And I'm like, oh, I wish I knew. I wish I'd have been there in person because I would love to know how Carol Burnett smells. And I imagine it's like lilacs, you know?
Right?
Like she was a joy. And the one thing, I'll tell you this, one thing I may have mentioned this, I probably did last time, but the thing that people never do is call you multiple times. They call you once, and if you don't pick up, you're done. Carol Burnett called me two or three times and couldn't get through because I have terrible connection where I am. And at my home, and then her people called me, and I am borderline crying, and because I know she called because she left voicemails. Again, celebrities don't leave voicemails. But eventually, you know, I got 20 minutes, you know, which is some of the best 20 minutes I've ever spent on the phone.
Wow, that's amazing. It's really cool to hear. During your research and doing this book, what surprised you the most while going through the process?
It was just that people remembered the really deep dives, and those are what I used to try and get people comfortable with me.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I mentioned this last time or not, but Adam McKay, I did ask him about when he was Morris the Cat from Nine Lives presidential campaign manager. And he, not only did he have a story, that is the job that saved his life pretty much. It like made it so that he could still live in Chicago, still pursue comedy, and also get Matt Besser's car out of Hawk. That was one of the things And I was like, oh, wow. I thought I was just asking you about a funny little goofy thing that you'd get a laugh out of and say, oh, how'd you find that? But no, there's a whole story behind it. And there were more of those kinds of stories than I expected. And probably even some that didn't make it into the book. But
so is it fair to say that as you're just talking to some of these people, they kind of relaxed a little bit and just kind of were themselves rather than putting out, you know, practiced answers to questions?
For the most part, yeah. I would say predominantly that's what happened. I think 12 years of interviewing on podcasts is what at least got me comfortable enough to ask big people questions without like fawning over them, because I don't really do that. I want to really badly, and I've done it. You can hear me on my podcast doing it to Weird Al and not leaving him alone. But yeah, I stayed chill, and that was the big thing. Was like, if I'm not sure if I can get into this person's like inner sanctum, I'm gonna throw an old fact at them, something that nobody's ever brought up in an interview before, and see if that works. And it inevitably did every time.
And see, that is one of the biggest reasons I can't wait to read this book, because those are the stories that you don't see, the trite questions on interviews for 5 minutes or in late night or in, you know, People magazine. I mean, it's those real questions and real responses. That's what I'm looking forward to the most.
Well, those are the things that made them stories worth telling. Because at some point you're like, am I just repeating stuff? Because I don't want it to be Wikipedia.
Right.
There are books that have been written about half of those shows, including ones you haven't heard of. The Seattle show Almost Live there's a whole book about it. But I don't want to be repeating everything they've done, even though if the timeline's going to have to be identical. There's good documentaries out there too. The Kids in the Hall documentary is great. And I had to avoid, you know, just repeating it word for word, because it's a perfect storytelling thing. But that's why I started with the stories.
We're talking to Jason Klum. He is the author of We're Not Worthy, A History of the 90s TV Sketch Comedy. You can find more information on it at sketchcomedybook.com. Jason, looking back in the 90s, I mean, you know, I went to high school in the 80s and in college in the early 90s. So, I mean, you know, for me, some of the coolest Saturday Night Live stuff was in the 90s. But for you interviewing or you personally, who do you think is kind of the biggest troupe or the biggest individual to influence sketch comedy in the 90s?
That's really hard, because SNL is invariably going to be the biggest influence, I think. Outside of that, the biggest influence, the big like sort of outlier, the one that you wouldn't catch or think about, you wouldn't assume from the beginning of the 90s this was going to happen, obviously, is Jim Carrey. Like, so because of In Living Color, which not only launched Jim Carrey's insane career, I mean, within a year he was or 2 years, whatever, he was the highest paid film star in the world. It made no sense. He had three movies come out the same year, all of which people were picking on him behind the scenes in Living Color about making. They're like, these are all stupid. And he was the biggest thing on the planet within a year. And I think he's underestimated, as well as like the power of the Wayans brothers. Like, I don't particularly care for the scary movie franchise, but I cannot discount it as something that people love. And that like became a whole new wave of spoof movies, which, again, I don't care for them, but I cannot deny them. Like, they're huge. So I think their influence is huge, much as I would actually like to see Keenan Ivory Wayans do like sketch again, or do something that's like from his heart again. Because if you've ever seen I'm Gonna Get You, Sucka, you know what the inner workings of that man's brain are. It's such a great movie.
Well, that's a great lead-in. I mean, some of this stuff is a little borderline, meaning that, you know, it's a little risky out there, whether you're doing it on television or what have. I mean, comedy oftentimes is groundbreaking. I mean, I was a big fan. I mean, I'm old enough that, you know, All in the Family, I still think, is one of the best TV shows ever put on television. But boy, you go back and look at that now, there are scenes in that that would never get aired today, whether it's the language or the inference. I mean, Norman Lear, that was dangerous stuff politically at the time. As you look back at sketch comedy from the 90s, what are some of the biggest, the most dangerous moments?
You know, that's hard too, because there's a lot, and there's dangerous that has a point, and then there's dangerous just for the sake of it's the 90s, of the late 80s, early 90s is the era of the shock jock. So everybody was just trying to be edgy for the sake of it. And I cover, there's a whole chapter of like, these are the weird edgy shows that were just didn't know what they were and just wanted to be edgy. There's literally a show called The Edge. Julie Brown's show was called The Edge.
I remember the title, but I can't tell you anything was about.
It's not great. However, it did launch the career of Jennifer Aniston, Wayne Knight, and a few other people. My buddy Rick Overton was on it. Alan Ruck, a.k.a. Cameron from Ferris Bueller, is in that show. It's the weirdest thing. It's not good. Very, very edgy for the sake of it. The thing about In Living Color which is what I normally go to, is yes, a lot of it is edgy for the sake of it, but then there's stuff that is just nobody's ever done this sketch on TV because a white person would not try to write this sketch, and they rightfully shouldn't. There's one called, I don't know what it's called, but it is about, oh boy, it's rough. It's not rough bad. It's rough, yeah. Like, again, I shouldn't be talking about it borderline, but long story short, Damon Wayans plays a guy who his great-great-grandfather was a slave, and he's raised his entire family in a cave, and he comes out thinking it's still slave times, and he is kowtowing to every white person he sees. And then David Alan Greer is a modern black man who's like, you don't have to do that, man. Like, this is a life. And then at some point, if I'm not mistaken, a cop beats him up, and it's just like, no, things haven't changed that much.
But you get right to the point of sometimes edgy drives home the point. I want to pick up on that and talk more with you on the other side. Don't go anywhere. We're talking with Jason Klom, author of We're Not Worthy, History of the 90s. You can find it at sketchcomedybook.com. Don't go anywhere. This is the Todd Allball Show. And this is the Civic Media Radio Network. Welcome back to the Todd Allball Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. It is now 10 before the hour of 3 o'clock at the top of the hour. We are 10 minutes away from national news, a check of weather, and then our friend and colleague, Matt Flynn of Matt Flynn Direct will be here. History in the making, always taking you to the front lines of history in the making. That is Matt Flynn Direct coming up after the news at 3 o'clock. Stay tuned for that. Right now, we are welcoming back to the show and happy to have him here, Jason Klom, author of We're Not Worthy, A History of the 90s TV Sketch Comedy. You can find it at sketchcomedybook.com. More on Jason and his work. Very talented guy, a sketch comedian, actor, voice actor as well. But right now we're talking about him, his latest work, also a podcaster in that as well. But Jason, this great book, We're Not Worthy, A History of the 90s. I want to pick up with you again or just finish off this because you're talking about the fact that, you know, much of the sketch comedy kind of pushes the envelope sometimes, isn't always politically correct. And I think that's where entertainment, television, comedy sometimes is at its best. And again, you can go back to, this isn't recent, right? I mean, Norman Lear did this. Others have done this. When you laugh at something that you know you probably shouldn't, if being in the realm of society, but it's funny because they're making fun of someone. And it's true. There's truth in that. And that's why it's funny. And I think oftentimes that helps push the envelope to make us better. Agree or disagree?
I agree with some nuance to it. I think we've come to a point where in the 70s, for instance, I do love All in the Family. And I do think that they were making the right points. But I don't know what their writer's room was composed of. But the thing about the 90s changed is that the writer's rooms were not exclusively white and male. They were still male.
Great point.
You know what I mean? And so, like, okay, let's say you want to do a show that's about pushing those boundaries for a reason and in the 70s, and the only people are getting hired are white people. I guess it's good that some people saying it, but it would have been nice if there was at least a little bit of co-signing. For instance, my favorite example of this is Blazing Saddles. Blazing Saddles, you want to look at a basic breakdown. Supposedly, all of the white characters, all the rednecks, predominantly had some input from Richard Pryor because Richard Pryor wanted to make sure those guys were portrayed the right way, whereas the guy who everybody else in the movie was Jewish for the most part, and they were writing every other character, right? Mm-hmm. So there is an element of co-signing, there's an element of balance, and in Living Color made it so that the balance shifted. And even if they were making the same exact jokes, they were making it now, you could be sure that it was coming from the right place.
Correct.
For certain. Even if, like, I laugh at that, I know they're making fun of a racist, I get that, blah, blah, blah. There is at least a new co-signing. There's at least something to be learned from the fact that it's not just a certain group of people who have always been telling these stories.
I totally agree.
That's why the 90s was important, I think, because it did... What part of the long subtitle of the book is why it changed the face of comedy. And it's I mean that literally. The TV becomes blacker, gayer, more Latino, more female focused. That's all snowballing in a very good way.
I couldn't agree with you more. I'm so glad you brought that up because there is, maybe it's not even a fine line, but there is a difference between egregious comedy just to get the laugh that really is still race-based or whatever you want to call it. It could be misogynistic or anti-gay or whatever. There's a point where you're just doing it to get the laugh versus getting the laugh to make a point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good way to put it. That's a very good way to put it. And it, you know, again, always helps to, again, to either be co-signed or let somebody else tell the joke. Yeah. That's always my thing. Can you, are you willing, like, as a person like me, as a white dude, to step aside to let somebody else tell the joke that you really think is great? Because I am. I would be perfectly fine, you know, right. with that. So it's yeah, it's a fun balance. But
if you were to go back and assemble a 90s sketch dream team, just like, you know, here if I was to put a, you know, a company on the stage for Saturday Night Live for a week or In Living, you know, whoever, you know, who would it be you put on that stage of your dream team for sketch comedy from the 90s?
Man, there's so many from every particular show, but I do think standouts are going to include Amy Poehler. She's hard to beat.
Yeah.
Bob Odenkirk. I'm going to say Ken Marino from The State, as well as Carrie Kenny Silver from The State. Jan Hooks and Phil Hartman from SNL. I figure since you're letting me pull from the 90s,
sure.
I'm putting Carol Burnett in there. Carol Burnett, can you imagine that show, and then you right? throw Carol Burnett on top of that? John Leguizamo, because mm-hmm. House of Buggin was a weirdly mm-hmm. good show. And then, you know, for a little bit of extra spice, I'll give you Joel McHale, from who was on Almost Live in Seattle.
Very nice.
Yeah, weird show, but a great show.
Well, that's a great team. And again, I think it speaks, you know, just because I think the world over it, it shows a person like you who's done the research, who knows it inside and out, have that kind of respect for Carol Burnett. I mean, she is a multi-generational talent.
Yeah. So. Yeah, she's iconic. I don't use that word lightly. She is genuinely iconic and... Yeah, holds up to it. Again, did not need to call me back.
The book is called We're Not Worthy, History of the 90s TV Sketch Comedy. Again, sketchcomedybook.com is where you can find more information and get it at your favorite bookstore, or, yes, on Amazon as well. But there was a cool foreword to the book you'd like to talk about as well, Jason.
Yeah, this is something I genuinely keep forgetting to mention, which is very stupid of me. But David Wayne from The State, who is a very famous director, very funny person, and a very generous person, wrote the foreword to the book. I think it was – I also surprised him with a crazy newspaper thing. But he enjoyed the interview enough that he was more than willing to do it, and it was very kind of him to do that.
Well, that's cool. I cannot wait to see it. Any other projects you're working on now that this is kind of finally launched and everything? What's next for Jason Klum?
I have like 5 books that I'm concurrently writing until somebody really? Buys one of them. One's the history of the stand-up comic named Dick Davey, whose true identity I discovered on the Comedy on Vinyl podcast. We've got a record coming out of his undiscovered records sometime in the next, I don't know, year, let's say, because records take forever. So there's a record coming out that I've produced and wrote an 8,000 word liner notes for.
Wow.
And there's a few other books that I'm developing again until somebody buys them or wants to be my agent, or, you know, if somebody turns this book into a TV show, then everything's out the window.
All right. That would be fantastic.
That'd be nice, right?
Right. Any other information people should know? Anything I didn't ask you, I'd like to make sure we get out there.
I would just say if you like listening to my voice for some reason, you can listen to Dan and Jay's Comedy Hour, which is a podcast with my best friend Dan Gomiller. We've been doing sketch comedy together now for 30 years, since we were 13. And the podcast is a continuation of that, where we talk about those sketches and then improvise with people coming in from different points in history and different universes. I often play old Groucho for no reason other than I like to do an old Groucho impression.
Nothing wrong with that. You can't beat Groucho. One of the best comedians ever, right?
Exactly. And old Groucho is just a weird, particular thing to be able to do.
Well, that's bad. You want to give us a little bit now? Do you have anything we could hear a little bit?
Well, he just sounds sleepy the whole time, because that's how, if you ever listen to that old record of his, he's just trying to do his old bits, but he doesn't quite have the energy to muster it, you know?
That, it's just a lot of that.
That is the perfect way to end the show, the perfect way to end the week. Jason Klum, we appreciate you so very much. The book is We're Not
Thank
Worthy,
you.
A History of the 90s and TV Sketch Comedy. Again, sketchcomedybook.com. Mr. Zommers will put it on our website as well. Thank you so much, Jason. Have a great afternoon.
Thank you. You too.
My pleasure. Thanks also to Mr. Zommers, all of the callers. Stay tuned. Matt Flynn Direct is next. Remember, whatever you're believing in, whatever you're fighting for, keep banging your drum.